listening to the Public Health Perspectives Podcast. Welcome to another episode of Public Health Perspectives, a podcast series targeted towards strengthening the future public health workforce. We will explore the narratives of public health care professionals and gain insight on career paths that shape the profession. And now, your host, Camilla Singletary.
Hi, welcome to another episode of Public Health Perspectives. Today I have Dr. Abigail Gamble on the show. Dr. Gamble is an assistant professor at the University of Mississippi Medical Center. She'll be discussing the creation and delivery of a program in the Mississippi Delta through WIC to prevent poor maternal and fetal outcomes. Welcome, Dr. Gamble.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Thank you so much. And so normally with the podcast, I get folks to give me a little bit of background about themselves. So your schooling, you know, how'd you get interested in public health, and then your current career path?
Sure, certainly. So I have a bachelor's degree in elementary education from Rowan University in New Jersey. I'm actually originally from New Jersey. And so it was during my time as an undergraduate student, pursuing a degree in elementary education, that the purpose for my life really became very clear to me. So I really felt as though I was being led to a career where I could help those who are overweight or obese to live healthy, whatever that may look like, you know, healthy as overweight or obese, but specifically through exercise. That desire and really kind of stemmed from my own life experiences as a child and into early adulthood. And then also just from my familial history, I do have some familial history of obesity and type 2 diabetes and heart disease in my family. And so, you know, it was something that was very salient to me. So I completed my undergraduate degree in elementary education, and then I moved to Oxford, Mississippi, where I attended the University of Mississippi and earned a master's degree in health promotion and a PhD in health and kinesiology. And, you know, to be honest, my original plan in coming to Mississippi was solely for a master's degree in health promotion, and I had a graduate assistantship with the Department of Recreation and Fitness. I thought at the time what I wanted to do was to be a fitness coordinator on a college campus. And so it was through my master's training that it was revealed to me that I had this opportunity. If I went on for a PhD, I had the opportunity to impact the lives of, you know, many populations in some ways, as opposed to if you think about the confines of a exercise facility, it's either sort of one-on-one with personal training or in a small group setting. And so that was very appealing to me. I really started to enjoy research. And so that's when I went on for the PhD in health and kinesiology. And so, you know, the journey of my career and my journey of being now a Mississippi resident, but the journey of my career in pediatric obesity prevention, you know, it really couldn't be more fulfilling. I'm living in my passion for children and fulfilling my desire, you know, to help others to be healthy and to prevent obesity, really, is what it comes down to. And so I followed my passion and made a commitment to having an enjoyable career with purpose. And so that's where I am now.
And so, of course, there in Mississippi, especially in the rural areas of Mississippi, I'm sure some of your challenges are a bit more unique, but I was reading that Mississippi has one of the highest infant mortality rates. Can you talk about some of the trends that are related to those infant and maternal mortality rates?
Sure. So while our infant mortality rate is slowly starting to decline, we're still, you know, as you mentioned, among the highest in the country. You know, some of the leading causes for that really, you know, stem from preterm birth, sudden unexpected deaths. The unexpected deaths are particularly related to unsafe sleeping practices. And so there's a number of things that are contributing to that. So Mississippi is among the most impoverished states in the country. It has a history of persistent poverty in many of its counties. It also has a history of persistent population decline in many of its rural counties. So, you know, poverty really fuels a lot of that. And then when you add, you know, to poverty, you add the fact that the population continues to decline and goods and services start to become more scarce. You have less access to not just health care, but you have less access to the things in your environment that you need to live healthy. You have less access to quality education, which is related obviously to your ability to obtain employment, which is related to your income, and so on and so forth. And so I believe it's the social factors that are really the root cause of why we have such high infant mortality rates in Mississippi. And, you know, and then that also lends to some of these behavioral things if we're, you know, having infant deaths that are related to unsafe sleeping practices. In my experience with some of the pregnant and postpartum Mississippians that I've worked with and that I've spoken with, it seems as though, you know, when you're low income or you're living in poverty, you know, the hierarchy of needs is just so much different. And so when someone becomes pregnant and they're on government assistance and they don't have a well-paying job or a job at all, you know, it's the necessities become essentially like diapers, wipes, and food, right? And so even a car seat or a place to sleep, those things are in some ways viewed as non-essentials. You know, I my baby can sleep next to me in my bed, right? Which we know that is a very unsafe sleeping practice.
Right.
So it really does. And sometimes it's not by choice, or it's not because a woman doesn't know any better or a parent doesn't know any better, but it's because that's what their circumstance is.
Those social determinants of health, they really do dictate those risky behaviors. And then from your viewpoint, as far as physical activity and combating obesity, as it relates to complicating those pregnancy issues, of course, like you said, these people don't have access to simple things like a bed for their child or a baby seat. And then even deeper than that, on that hierarchy of needs, they may not even have proper food. They don't have transportation. I don't know. What kind of other things have you seen as far as like risk behaviors, particularly in your area? I'm sure it's probably kind of similar to what's seen across the U.S., especially in the rural South.
I really think one of the things that I think is not discussed enough, maybe it is acknowledged, I don't even know if it's acknowledged, but it's just not discussed enough, is the role that the social history of Mississippi and how that really comes into play with policies and environmental conditions, which I think also contribute to high infant mortality rates and also to some disparities in other health outcomes in Mississippi. But Mississippi has a very rich history in race relations, racism, slavery, you know, the civil rights movement. And while we're not living back in those days now, they worked hard to change some of those, you know, some of that socially, but it's almost like a hurricane coming through and, you know, you survive, but then nobody comes to help you to rebuild, you know. And so if you look at specifically even in the Mississippi Delta, which is where my work is focused, it's a very distinct, geographically and culturally distinct 18-county region in northwest Mississippi. And it is a region of rich history of farming. And as such, it also has that rich history of slavery. And so it's a predominantly African-American region. It is probably among the most impoverished areas within Mississippi. And so I think that sometimes you have to take a look at what are the policies that may be contributing to some of this and what are some of the environmental influences, you know. And so I just think that's something that's not really discussed much or acknowledged in our state. And so I think it's important to, you know, to think about those things and think about how some of that social context and the history really can have an impact on, does have an impact on people's behaviors today.
And so you've been doing some community engaged research in maternal and child health, and you actually won an award. Can you talk about your work in the Mississippi Delta and kind of how that developed and where it's going to be going?
Certainly. So the work I'm doing right now, the study is called the Teen Mom Study. And it is a pre-pilot study that is designed to identify psychosocial, cultural, and environmental determinants of exercise behavior in pregnant and postpartum teens that are in the Mississippi WIC program. And for those that don't know, WIC stands for the Special Supplemental Nutritional Program for Women, Infants, and Children. It's a federally funded, state-run program whose goal is to protect the health of low-income women, infants, and children who are at nutritional risk. And so the idea behind intervening with this population is that we have the potential to prevent early pediatric obesity in offspring. And then on top of that, we're working with pregnant adolescents who are still developing themselves. And so our hope is, or we're in the process of collecting these data, and our next phase will be to adapt and test an existing mobile health intervention that we would implement, you know, through WIC to reach the adolescent population to hopefully encourage them to exercise. So WIC already provides, you know, nutritious foods and nutritional education and counseling, healthcare referrals. And so if we add the other piece to that with regards to prevention, we add in physical activity, our hope is that we will be supporting or promoting healthy gestational weight gain through, you know, healthy eating and active living, healthy gestational weight gain, which reduces the risks for maternal and child obesity. And there is, in adolescent populations, low-income and racial ethnic minorities are at increased risk for maternal and child obesity. So it's really important, I think, you know, from a population health perspective, to be able to develop a targeted intervention. And so the intervention I mentioned, we're adapting this. So this mobile intervention that we're adapting actually originates back to some work that Gary Bennett has done at Duke University. He created what is known as IOTA. It is the Interactive Obesity Treatment Approach, and it's a obesity treatment intervention. It's a digital intervention that has shown efficacy in adult populations to help reduce obesity. And then Sharon Herring, who is at Temple University, she worked with Gary Bennett to do a study. They adapted the content of the intervention to meet the needs of adult WIC moms in Philadelphia. And so her study also found some efficacy in looking at promoting healthy gestational weight gain and improving health behaviors. And so now I'm working with Sharon. She is one of my mentors. And actually this summer, we're going to start to adapt the content of these messages to match the information needs, the values, the family structure of adolescents in a rural setting, obviously in Mississippi. So we're starting to get into some of the really exciting stuff that we're starting to do, the intervention adaptation. And in the coming year, we will begin to test the efficacy of the intervention or the acceptability of the intervention material with our pregnant adolescents. And then hopefully with that preliminary data, we'll have a strong foundation to obtain some NIH funding to do a pilot randomized control trial. So that's the work I'm doing now. It is focused in the Mississippi Delta and select communities. I am traveling to the Delta from Jackson, Mississippi, where the University of Mississippi Medical Center is, and doing surveys mostly with teens and their parents in their homes. In some instances, we do meet at the health department. And I'm also doing small group interviews with adolescents and small group interviews with parents. I've completed small group interviews with WIC providers, which was very informative. We did in January and February of 2018. I conducted interviews with WIC providers to really begin to understand the context for this intervention and to shed some light on counseling adolescent clients and to gain WIC providers' perspective on an antenatal exercise intervention. WIC-based interventions are frequently informed by the perspectives of WIC moms, which makes sense, right? That's your target population. But we forget that WIC is implemented by WIC providers, and so their lived experiences, opinions, and perspectives are vitally important. It's critical to help inform the context of the intervention. And in our case, we really found that to be true. And we were able, from our interviews, we were able to garner four testable hypotheses around recruitment, retention, and engagement of adolescents in a future intervention study, which, you know, any intervention protocol that you submit for review is those things are going to be heavily critiqued. You know, how are you going to recruit? And, you know, how successful will you be? And what about retaining and those types of things? So really very valuable insight by engaging those perspectives of frontline public health practitioners. In addition to now we're still conducting our small group interviews with teens and their parents as well. But we're also doing environmental audits. And so we're going into 25 select communities throughout the Mississippi Delta, and we are conducting assessments, environmental assessments, to determine physical activity friendliness of communities. And so we're using the physical activity resource assessment tool to identify and assess the quality and presence of features, amenities, and incivilities of parks and playgrounds, public parks and playgrounds that are within the communities. And then we're also using the rural active living assessment tool, the street walkability tool, to really be able to describe how walkable our communities. And it's actually through that work where you really do start to see some of the disparities in housing and the divide of neighborhoods as we've done this work. And it's very timely. Utilizing these environmental audit tools, especially the street segment walkability, it takes a lot of time. And I spend a lot of time traveling. But I have to say, it is so well worth it. It is such a, you know, an investment in preparing for a quality intervention because, you know, I'm really being ingrained into these communities and I'm there. I'm assessing things, I'm seeing things, and you know, documenting things. And so it really just sheds a whole lot of light on some of the environmental features among these rural communities. And I also did, for a time after I finished my PhD, I did live in the Mississippi Delta for 2 years, and I did work for the Mississippi State Department of Health, which is the Mississippi State Department of Health runs our WIC program. And so I got the opportunity to experience our state's public health services. And I had an opportunity to live in the Mississippi Delta, and I experienced firsthand limited access to healthy foods, limited access to, you know, safe places for recreation. So that perspective was very valuable as well. So sort of taking back to your question, taking all of this information that we're learning, adapting the intervention, and then in the future, having an opportunity to pilot test that for efficacy and then move on from there.
The work that you're doing is so important. It does take a lot of work up front, but there's nothing like being able to tailor a program to be exactly what the people that you're trying to affect need.
It really is just amazing how important the lifestyle and the health of a female prior to pregnancy and then during pregnancy, how that impacts the expression of genes in their offspring, and not just their offspring. If, you know, a mother carrying a female child, they're not just impacting the life that's growing inside them. You know, if they're having a daughter, they're also impacting their grandchild.
Right.
And so it's just really amazing. And so when you circle back to that hierarchy of needs and you circle back to the tragedy of poverty and just circle back to that, and think about, you know, for example, okay, today my family and I are hungry and we need food, and tomorrow my baby's not due for 6 more months, and so I have time to access my prenatal care. So when you think about transportation in a rural setting, let me back up for a second, you know, transportation is a huge barrier in many rural settings across the country. I know specifically in Mississippi, in the Mississippi Delta, there are a lot of teens that even family members, they have to pay them to take them to a doctor's appointment or to take them to their WIC appointments. And so when you're talking about the hierarchy of needs and you think about, okay, again, my family is hungry. Today, my family and I are hungry and we need food. So I need to go to my WIC appointment. I'll worry about getting to my doctor's appointment some other time because I've got 6 months until my baby is due. And so it's really fulfilling those needs and it's human survival. So it's important for programs like WIC, who caters to women during pregnancy and postpartum and children up to the age of 5. Those programs are in such a unique position. And not just, I'm learning in my research that it's not just about a position to be able to impact, to educate, and to hopefully counsel and change health behaviors, but you've got to have a system for addressing the social determinants of health. You know, for example, my recruitment occurs via text with potential participants, and right now I have 2 teenagers who have reached out to me and they need help with applying for Section 8 housing. There are some instances where the teen is 18, they have a SNAP card for themselves and for their child, and their mom has taken the card, and now they don't know how to get food. And so there are so many instances where, you know, here I am showing up to do a survey about exercise, and this young mother is so stressed because she doesn't know where she's going to live, and she doesn't have food for her and her child. And so now take that persistent, that chronic stress, and how that's impacting a growing fetus. It is really very multi-level and multifaceted for sure. And I think that's really where population health, the world of population health as opposed to public health, also comes in as being very vital to helping to, you know, reduce infant mortality and improve maternal and child health outcomes across the board and prevent obesity. Here in Mississippi, and again, I can only speak to what my research experiences and to the population that I work with, but, you know, specifically in the Mississippi Delta region, families, households are predominantly multi-generational, single-parent female heads of households. And African-American women are influencing generations of their family, and in some cases, generations of people who are or not biologically related to them. And so African-American women play such a vital role in the lives of people living in the Delta. It's very clear, and it's very heroic. And so WIC providers said themselves, if you don't have grandma and mom on board, you know, if you're trying to encourage teen to go out and exercise or to wait until 6 months to start the baby with baby food or something along those lines, if the grandmother and the mom aren't on board, it's not going to happen. It doesn't matter who's telling you.
Right.
And so there really needs to be a family approach. And in my conversations with teens, I just find this so interesting because I do feel like people do often make assumptions about certain populations. And I talk to so many teens, they're 15, they're 16, they're 17, they're 18. And I ask them, how did your life change when you became pregnant? And almost all of them say, at such a young age, they say, it's no longer about me, it's about my baby. And I ask them, well, tell me about your prenatal care. Tell me about the health care that you've received since your baby's been born. Oh, I don't worry about myself. I just try to make sure that my baby is able to go to the doctor. And so their priority is to have a better life for their child. We've been very successful at creating very positive and sustainable relationships with families, with African American families in the Mississippi Delta. And so, you know, it takes time to build that trust.
It does.
And it takes time to really build a strong foundation for a community engaged research program. And so it's important to take that time to invest the time and to get to know people and to really build meaningful and positive relationships. And that's where the success comes in, because at the end of the day, we all want the same thing. We want to improve the lives of children. I mean, that's a beautiful thing to have in common.